Chapter 10. Balto, Hero of the Snows. Stateside, news of the arrival of antitoxin into Nome was plastered everywhere. Pictures of Balto's valiant arrival into town along Front Street, an event reenacted for cameras once daylight was available, made the front pages. President Calvin Coolidge sent letters of commendation to those who had participated, the Senate paused to pay its respects, and fundraising drives were launched to compensate the mushers for their heroic efforts. People were just as charitable to the dogs themselves. Togo and Balto became household names as envelopes containing letters of thanks, even poems like "Balto, Hero of the Snows," began to flood the Nome post office. The manufacturer of the antitoxin, H.K. Mulford, rewarded each of the 20 drivers with a gold medal, an investment they were happy to make considering the enormous publicity the whole affair generated. It was perfect timing. News that the children of Nome, Alaska had been saved by Balto, Togo, and the antitoxin shots they carried over 600 miles of barren Alaska could not have come at a better moment. Health officials began to sense they had a legitimate weapon with which they could fight diphtheria, and nearly everyone was now aware of it. Previously, their jobs might entail recommendations of quarantine and calculating deaths. Besides their admonishments to screen windows, cover trash cans, and use the bathhouses made available for the poor to clean themselves, they had no tools in their arsenal with which to battle disease. The threat of smallpox had long since faded, and for the crop of illnesses mothers currently feared, tuberculosis, scarlet fever, and diphtheria, they had nothing. Now, it was clear the dogs of Alaska were helping to raise awareness of the new diphtheria shot. Balto and Togo were making tours of the United States, appearing at events before throngs of men, women, and children, pulling their adoring fans across playgrounds and through city streets in special-made sleds with wheels. New York's Central Park permanently enshrined their memory with a statue of Balto still seen by thousands today. Everywhere the dogs went, the thoughts of children at death's door, saved by a diphtheria shot, accompanied them. At that time, only 9 out of every 235 families were even aware of the diphtheria shot. As a result, money began to pour in from corporate donors eager to help bolster the effort to control and possibly wipe out the disease. The philanthropic Milbank Fund donated $1 million, while the Metropolitan Life Insurance Company funded its own nationwide campaign to raise awareness of the shot. Immunization would no longer be touted as an optional extravagance, but a public duty. Rather than a doctor coming to visit someone's home, parents could bring their children to a free clinic. Advertisements ran in magazines and newspapers as messages began to appear on buses and grocery stores. Those already protected by the shot sported buttons that proclaimed, "I am immunized against diphtheria. Are you?" The sentiment that the bacterial menace might be stamped out once and for all began to permeate through the country. Vaccination was making the transition from a sideshow to the main stage. Behind the scenes, those who made the vaccines were unsettled. The rates of diphtheria were not going down as they had hoped. In some places, they had gone up at alarmingly higher rates. The antitoxin injections seemed to protect guinea pigs, but their effects on children were largely unknown. Additionally, the variability of the shots concerned them. Some batches seemed to work perfectly, while others might offer no protective effect. While they struggled to perfect its production, scientists offered what they hoped was a temporary solution. Rather than a single antitoxin shot, children would be administered 3 in 1 month intervals. This, they hoped, would increase the opportunity for the immune system to respond to the diphtheria toxin without causing an undue burden on the infants receiving them. The decision was not received well by parents or doctors. Human pincushions became a derisive term physicians used to refer to the children they were asked to treat. Parents who had reluctantly accepted their healthy infants receiving the painful injection refused to submit their children to 3 separate shots. Vaccines were still viewed with suspicion by many, and the thought of submitting their children free from disease to multiple jabs turned many away. Another problem became even more apparent. The serum sickness some children experienced from a single injection was now manifesting itself in full effect. Allergy is at its most dangerous not upon the initial exposure to a foreign material, but upon subsequent exposures, after the body has generated the ability to recognize and respond to the invader. Children who received a second or third injection of the toxin-antitoxin shot exhibited serum sickness with symptoms far beyond anything parents had witnessed before. Rather than malaise and rashes, respiratory failure or death became more common. Improvements to dehorsing the serum had been made, but with multiple injections now being recommended, it made even more stringent manufacturing precision necessary. The frequent accounts of near-death reactions to diphtheria shots serve to highlight the danger of injecting humans with animal-derived products. After what had been great fanfare, the public's faith in the shot began to waver. Its effectiveness wasn't being openly questioned, but the stories of children stricken down from serum sickness made parents terrified to allow their children to be injected. Something else was needed, and quickly. Diphtheria was still killing thousands, and the heroic efforts of Alaska's sled dogs had been squandered.